My name is Leonidas, and this is Informed Dissent. What's up, guys? Welcome to episode 20 of Informed Dissent, the podcast where we push back on the culture of groupthink and challenge the narrative. I hope you're having a great week and going out and living your lives, not waiting for Fauci to tell you that it's okay. Not only do you not need that clown's permission, but he's never going to say it's okay. So I'm not sure why anyone still listens to that guy. And he flip-flops all over the place. He's taken all kinds of contradictory positions during the course of the pandemic. No masks, masks are mandatory, two masks are effective, two masks are common sense. Asymptomatic spread is not how pandemics spread. He said that at the beginning. Now all of a sudden it is. He keeps pushing back the time frame for return to quote unquote normality and saying that even after getting the vaccine, we still won't be able to gather in crowds. We still have to wear masks. How many masks? Who knows? Maybe we should wear 15 for ultimate safety. I mean, look, the dude loves the sound of his own voice. And I've never seen a scientist more excited to be on TV. He's a snake and a fraud. And I had my suspicions about him back in April when he went on CNN and said he didn't understand why the whole country wasn't locked down. Stop listening to that guy. Now, with that said, I think people should do whatever they think is best for themselves and their family. The virus is obviously real, and certain populations of people are particularly vulnerable to it. That's obvious. But you have to make decisions that you think are best based on your own health and what risks you're personally willing to accept. But I personally think that the most tragic aspect of this entire pandemic has been the people who bought into the fear and sacrificed everything, sacrificed going out, sacrificed seeing their family and their friends, doing the things they love to do. They sacrificed living their life only to end up dying anyway. Don't let that be you. I understand there's a virus, but there are all kinds of things out there that can kill us, and we may die in the next 5 minutes. We don't know. We embrace these risks every single day because there is way more to life than just surviving, just existing. No one is promised tomorrow. Go live your life now. I'm so tired of these sanctimonious people trying to act like curling up in the fetal position and refusing to live until you eliminate all risk from your life is somehow virtuous. It's not. Allowing a 98-year-old woman to die alone in a nursing home, isolated from her family and nearly all human contact except for the occasional nursing aide that comes in, and then not allowing her family to see her or hold a proper funeral for her even after she dies? You call that virtue? Forcing little children to wear masks and sit in pods, or not even allow them to go to school at all and see their friends. Watching the suicide rate among children skyrocket due to isolation and depression. You call that virtue? Shutting down businesses, causing people to lose their life's work. Exponentially increasing deaths of despair, all of these things just because you're afraid of getting sick. Is that virtue? I call that cruel and evil. Anytime one person believes that they should control the lives of others, and they decide what sacrifices that other person needs to make, what sacrifices are reasonable for them, it's always evil. To put it another way, you believe yourself to be in a morally infallible position to tell others what level of intentional suffering is acceptable for them. And it is intentional. There is no free lunch. There are only trade-offs. We've said that many times. And the trade-off is your perceived safety for their suffering. Your perceived safety for their suffering. That's exactly what it is. You're saying that it's okay to make them suffer as long as it serves the greater good and makes you feel safe. We are living in an upside-down world, and I'm reminded of Alice in Wonderland, like how everything is in the world is just bizarre and twisted. And that's what things really are turning into right now, a twisted, grotesque, bizarro world where we're supposed to accept the distortion of reality that we're told to accept instead of the reality that we know exists. They'll tell you 2 + 2 = 5, and don't you dare even think about challenging it. The Equality Act was passed by the House of Representatives yesterday, and the pitch is that it will offer legal protections for the LGBTQ community against discrimination for sex, sexual orientation, and gender identity. As with most things in politics, especially from Democrats, what they tell you it is always a lie, and what it actually is normally something nefarious. And this is the case here. This so-called Equality Act would essentially erase women in favor of being inclusive. Biological men will have access to women's restrooms, locker rooms, dressing rooms, whatever. We already know that there's been a push to consider misgendering someone an act of harassment and discrimination. We also know that there's been a push to change language from things like pregnant woman to pregnant person or person who menstruates instead of woman. I mean, it's absurd. Person who breastfeeds instead of woman. I mean, this stuff is just madness. So what are the implications here? If I refuse to let a dude go into the bathroom or locker room while my daughter is in there, am I guilty of a discrimination? If I refuse to use the terminology person who menstruates and instead call them a woman, am I guilty of harassment? It's absurd. Now, look, I don't think anyone should be treated badly, okay? Regardless of what mental illness they're suffering from. And gender dysphoria is a mental illness. But still, I think kindness and empathy are needed. Absolutely. People shouldn't be attacked or discriminated against. But at the same time, I'm not going to deny reality in order to participate in their delusion. And if we allow this to continue, that refusal to deny reality could have significant legal implications. Will all churches be forced to perform same-sex weddings against their religious beliefs? Will men just be allowed to play women's sports without challenge? Which, by the way, is so ridiculous. I mean, I can't believe this is where we are as a society. I mean, it's common sense. Why do we even have separate sports? Separate leagues? It's because there are clear biological differences between men and women. This is not debatable. I thought we were supposed to trust the science, but here we are pretending science doesn't even exist when it comes to differences between males and females. It's unreal. There's absolutely no defense for allowing biological males to compete against females. I don't care how they feel inside. We don't have separate sports because of feelings and emotions. Congresswoman Marie Newman put a transgender flag outside of her office in order to troll Marjorie Taylor Greene. And so Marjorie Taylor Greene came back and put a sign outside of her office that says there are two genders, male and female. Trust the science. And I love that. See, this is how we win this thing. We refuse to back down. We stick to our guns unapologetically. Oh, it hurts your feelings? Well, too bad. Enough with the tiptoeing around, right? Following Marjorie Taylor Greene's example, you stand up and you say what you know to be true. Men cannot be women, no matter how badly they want to be. They cannot menstruate. They can't have babies. They can't breastfeed. It can't happen. There was a Gallup poll that came out the other day on sexual orientation by generation, and the results are just unreal. Just looking at the changes from the baby boomer generation, born between 1946 and 1964, and Generation Z, who was born between 1997 and 2002, there has been a 700% increase in homosexuality, a 600% increase in transgenderism, and a 3,800% increase in bisexuality. Now, the defenders of this will say that it's just because people are more comfortable admitting it. But there is much more going on here, obviously. That is a massive, massive increase. A couple years ago, there was a study on transgenderism done that concluded that much of the rise in transgenderism among teenagers was due to what they called rapid onset gender dysphoria, because these kids would just become transgender out of the blue, and they'd have friends in their peer group who would do the same, and none of them had exhibited any signs of gender dysphoria when they were younger. And this study was suppressed and deemed dangerous, not because it had scientific problems, but because advocates didn't like the conclusions. And they said as much. They said that they feared that the research would lead to anti-trans discrimination. See, that makes you wonder how many more studies are being suppressed that we haven't heard about, or how many studies just haven't been done because researchers are too afraid to challenge the dogma. Several universities have boards that review research for racial or gender bias. The people who sit on these boards are activists who have no problem killing any research project that challenged the accepted narrative. That has terrifying implications. That means that the only research we'll hear about will be the research that fits their specific agenda. So where does all this end? Is it going to be against the law to even oppose the LGBT agenda? Or to question the reality of gender fluidity or transgenderism? If you refuse to play along with the delusions, will you be punished for it? I saw that some police department in the UK posted a picture of some of their officers on Twitter with an LGBT flag and a big sign that said, "Being offensive is an offense." Being offensive is an offense. I mean, that goes right along with the idea that words are violence, or silence is violence, that we should be punished merely for ideas. Can people be arrested for being offensive? Is that where we're going, ultimately? Sure seems like it. Now, I know that's the UK, but the US is not far behind. The leftist poison is pervasive and destructive. One of the most well-known medical journals, The Lancet, has embraced critical race theory and is pushing those ideas as they relate to medicine. We've talked about that before. And I saw the other day they put out an article that states that Asian Americans need to recognize their position of privilege in order to fight white supremacy in solidarity with Black people. How asinine is that? Does that sound like science to you? Or does that sound like religion, dogma, zealotry? I mean, this stuff is a mind virus, and it makes smart people stupid. It turns smart people who used to be reasonable, into absolute fools. It's unbelievable. I can't believe that a world-renowned medical journal like The Lancet would come out and specifically target a racial group and scold them for not doing enough to stop white supremacy. Like I told you, it's Alice in Wonderland, completely upside down. This whole idea that Asian Americans are some privileged minority, it's ridiculous. And it's so transparent. And it's obvious what they're doing. Asian Americans outperform every single demographic in the U.S., including white people. So the idea of systemic racism is essentially destroyed by their success. So, much like everything else with progressivism, this is retroactive rationalization. They're starting from a definitive conclusion that they say cannot be contested, and then manufacturing evidence around it to try to keep that conclusion afloat. So since Asian Americans destroy the narrative of systemic racism and white supremacy, They must announce that Asian Americans are a privileged minority and that they're white adjacent and therefore benefit from white privilege. It's the only explanation. They succeed because they are also white, obviously. It's so unbelievably absurd. I want to just laugh at how insanely ridiculous it is, but people are pushing this as if it's scientific fact and it cannot be challenged. It's incredible. And it doesn't even stop at Asian Americans. I mean, they've been taking this line of logic to explain why any minority succeeds in America. I've personally been told that the only reason I'm successful and haven't experienced systemic racism is because I've adopted white behaviors and benefit from white privilege. Go figure. Several of my Twitter friends have pointed out that such thinking is extremely racist in and of itself, and they're right, because it makes the assumption that white behaviors are superior to all others and therefore lead to success. That what are white behaviors anyway? Speaking with proper grammar, work ethic, personal responsibility? And if you think those are white behaviors, I don't think you get to call anyone else a white supremacist. But like I said, it's hard to believe anyone is seriously embracing this stuff. I mean, there was an elderly Asian American man who was assaulted by a black guy in, I think, San Francisco a couple weeks ago. And the guy ended up dying. It's just extremely tragic. And yet, you'd be hard-pressed to find a news article that mentions the race of his killer. Now, I'm not saying that it's important that we know what the race of the killer was. But if the killer had been white, then it would have been all over the place. And I looked at several articles, and most didn't even have a picture of the guy, let alone have what his race was. And that seems deliberate. And then they turn around and find a way to blame it on white supremacy and white nationalism anyway. There was even a march against white nationalism held after the guy died. Are you kidding me? I mean, black people in California are assaulting Asian people, and somehow that's still white people's fault. What? I remember there was a similar conversation after that black guy killed a bunch of Jewish people in New York in a clear anti-Semitic attack. And people were scared to death to criticize it because they didn't want to initiate any anti-black hostility. So they instead blame the attack on white supremacy, as if the guy has no agency whatsoever and his poor little racial minority mind has been duped by white supremacists to believe Jews are evil. It's exasperating. White people are held responsible for everything negative that exists in the world. And it's crazy. I mean, no other culture or people can apparently be responsible for what they do, but it all must be filtered through the lens of whiteness and white supremacy. Madness. Absolute madness. The level of cognitive dissonance that people are willing to engage in to maintain their toxic worldview is staggering. And I've said before that this woke ideology does not care about principles or ideological consistency or evidence or even truth. It cares only about advancing its agenda by any means necessary. So people who adhere to it have absolutely no interest in adjusting their perspective to match reality. They instead adjust reality to match their perspective. And that's why we get all of this ridiculousness. So apparently the Muppets are also deemed offensive now. Disney has started slapping disclaimers on different films and TV shows on their Disney Plus platform that warns viewers that the program features negative depictions and/or mistreatment of people or cultures. Like, I don't know what episodes triggered them. I don't care. It's absurd. It's like all of these organizations are tripping over themselves, trying to emit the ultimate virtue signal and just outstupid each other. Disney's constantly doing ridiculous nonsense, and I'm sick of it. But there seems to be an increasing number of companies that are willing to embrace wokeness, whether it's critical race theory ideas or transgender activism or whatever it may be. But it's spreading like wildfire. I mean, it was just announced yesterday that Hasbro is removing the Mr. from Mr. Potato Head in order to be more inclusive. Yeah, you have to laugh. I don't know. Ali Beth Stuckey summed it up perfectly. She asked, "Why is everything so unbelievably stupid?" And it's a great question. Why? It's maddening. It feels intentional, right? And you almost have to believe it's intentional. Like, there's no way this is happening by accident. I said at the beginning of the pandemic, and especially after George Floyd died, that it feels like psychological warfare. I've never seen so many people just come unraveled all at the same time. Like a mass hysteria. You know, people who I knew to be reasonable, rational people, just completely losing their minds. Psychological warfare. I've said before that I can't even watch corporate media at all. And turn on CNN or MSNBC or whatever. You can feel it affecting you. It's not right. 10 years ago, it wasn't like this. We weren't being continuously pelted with absurdity after absurdity. And now it's like that scene from Star Trek where Captain Picard is being tortured and told to accept an obvious lie as truth, that there are 5 lights in the room instead of 4. Which is based on the scene from 1984 when Winston is being tortured in a similar fashion and O'Brien holds up 4 fingers and tells him there are 5. The party told you to reject the evidence of your eyes and ears. It was their final, most essential command. Demoralization, humiliation, and capitulation. This, to me, appears to be the ultimate goal. And you have a candidate for Attorney General, Merrick Garland, stating that the Capitol riots were domestic terrorism, but the Antifa riots were not, because the Antifa riots were at night. What? At night? That's what his rationale was. Because they weren't going after federal buildings during the day, it doesn't qualify as domestic terrorism. Reject the evidence of your eyes and ears. I mentioned last episode that Gina Carano was fired for posting a warning about hating your neighbors. She said, quote, "Jews were beaten in the streets, not by Nazi soldiers, but by their neighbors, even by children. Because history is edited, most people today don't realize that to get to the point where Nazi soldiers could easily round up thousands of Jews, the government first made their own neighbors hate them simply for being Jews. How is that different from hating someone for their political views?" End quote. Anti-Semitic? Does that sound anti-Semitic to you? In 2018, the Auschwitz Memorial tweeted this quote out. "When we look at Auschwitz, we see the end of the process. It's important to remember that the Holocaust actually did not start from gas chambers. This hatred gradually developed from words, stereotypes, and prejudice through legal exclusion, dehumanization, and escalating violence." End quote. Now, isn't that the exact same thing that Gina said? Reject the evidence of your eyes and ears. We've been told over and over and over again that unarmed black men are being gunned down by racist police officers en masse. So much so that it's caused people to completely lose touch with reality. What the truth is. They have absolutely no clue what the real numbers are because they've been lied to by the party, as it were, and told repeatedly to accept that they're holding up 5 fingers instead of 4. Skeptic magazine put out some polling on what people believe to be true about police shootings, and it's just insane. I say that a lot, but it is. It's insane. 84% of very liberal people think it's more than 100 unarmed black people killed by police every year. 55% believe it's more than 1,000. 78% of liberals think it's more than 100. 40% more than 1,000. 67% of moderates think it's more than 100. 24% more than 1,000. 54% of conservatives think it's more than 100. 24% more than 1,000. That's ridiculous. The actual number of unarmed black people killed by police in 2020? 18. How is it possible that so many people so badly overestimated that? Because the party told you to reject the evidence of your eyes and ears. This is where we are. What about the pandemic? Fauci and every other so-called expert that has been trotted out by the media have flip-flopped all over the place, changing their positions on pretty much everything. What happened to flatten the curve? 15 days to slow the spread. Keep hospitals from being overwhelmed. Are we just supposed to forget that they pushed this stuff? And not just skeptically, or as maybe we should try this and see what happens, but they pushed it as definitive, settled science. And that you were being a selfish idiot who wanted to kill people's grandma if you didn't listen to them. Probably the most egregious has been what they've done to kids in schools. And a lot of that has to do with political pressure from teachers' unions. But it doesn't matter what the motivations are. They are lying to your face and telling you to repeat the lie as if it's truth. We know there's little risk of spread in kids and that outbreaks haven't been demonstrated where schools have been open. And it's a ridiculous argument. It's ridiculous to say that we need to keep schools closed. And the kids are suffering because of it. Now, don't get me wrong. I think public schools are a mostly terrible system. And kids would be much better off with school choice. However, they don't have any choice right now. If their school is shut down, they don't have a choice. They're at home doing remote learning, which is often awful. They're isolated. And for what? We're told over and over again that this is for the benefit and safety of the children. And that is a straight up lie. Lie after lie after lie. Absurdity after absurdity. The bombardment of nonsense almost seems to be the point, doesn't it? Confound your enemy. Disorient them. Make them question their reality. Question their own sanity. It's gaslighting on steroids with the power of the government behind it. And there really is a CIA technique called the Alice in Wonderland technique, in which the objective is to confuse the person being interrogated, making the world they experience as unpredictable and chaotic as possible. And because people are accustomed to a predictable world of continuity and logic, destroying that makes them extremely vulnerable. According to the Kubark Manual, which is a CIA interrogation manual, the Alice in Wonderland technique is designed not only to obliterate the familiar, but to replace it with the weird. And as the process continues, day after day, as necessary, the subject begins to try to make sense of the situation, which becomes mentally intolerable. And then they're likely to submit to the interrogator, likely to capitulate. Now, I'm not pushing conspiracy theory and saying that the CIA is involved with what's going on here, but I am saying that this was or is a successful technique used by the CIA. And the people in power right now who are currently promoting all of this insanity around us seem to have a really good grasp on that fact. We're being told that 2 + 2 = 5, and saying otherwise is bigotry and discrimination, and you need to be punished. The dissociation with reality is the point. It's about submission. It's not about truth. That's what it was about in Orwell's 1984 as well. They have complete power over you if they can get you to acknowledge that something is real when you know that it clearly isn't. There's an appropriate quote, and I'm not exactly sure who it's attributed to. Some people attribute it to the author of the Gulag Archipelago, Alexander Solzhenitsyn. But the quote goes like this. They lie to us. We know they're lying. They know that we know they're lying. But they keep lying to us. And we keep pretending to believe them. I say it's time that we stop it. We stop pretending to believe them. We stop going along with it. And we stand up and boldly tell the truth. That's how we beat this thing. Thanks for listening. I'm Leonidas, and this has been Informed Dissent. If you would like to help support the show through donation, you can do so at donorbox.org/Leonidas. donorbox.org/Leonidas. I really appreciate that. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe, give it a 5-star rating, share with your friends. Also, follow me on social media at Leonidas Johnson. And check out my website at leonidasjohnson.com. And always remember, do your own research, challenge everything. Don't be afraid to stand up for what you believe. We'll see you next week. God bless.